Welcome to the audio podcast of The Table at Central United Methodist Church. The podcast currently features the messages of Matt Smith and Linda Du Hirsu,
with a musical introduction by Brendan Lowe, our director of music. Thanks for listening. Prophet Isaiah dreams about the coming beauty and hope and love of God's shalom, God's hope, into the world. And in chapter 11, verse 6, this is what that dream looks like. The wolf shall live with the lamb. The leopard shall lie down with the kid, the calf and the lion and the fatling together. And a little child shall lead them. There's a professor and a pastor over in the Bay Area who teaches and writes about children and worship and Christian community. And she shares a story that helps me to remember how far we really are from God's dream of being led by a little child. She tells a story like this. So she's over in the Bay Area, and her child is 2.5 or so at the time. And they go into one of those family-friendly pizza restaurants in the Bay. You have your image of what that means or what that looks like. Everybody can imagine it. And her child is 2.5. So we get to a place toward the end of the day when you haven't had a snack at this age and hangry sets in. The child is hungry and angry and it combines together. And if you've been there as a parent, you want to like crawl into a hole and just like make everything go away, let the world fall apart. So she is doing what a phenomenal parent does. She's taking, being assertive. She's going to figure out some way to make sure her child has some food. So she goes over to the salad bar and she starts to find something, anything there. She's opening a cracker. But the time she turns around, there is a man who has gotten out of his place and who has his finger spread out right in front of her. And he is letting her know, for Christ's sake, can't you shut up your child? I didn't come out to this restaurant to have this kind of stuff happening. And so she is, on one level, she's just kind of shocked. She's shocked not really at what he's saying, but the tone of it, the anger that this person has. And then at the same level, she's shocked because this was the family-oriented restaurant, right? Well, until a child acts like a child, and then it's not as family-oriented anymore. It's the child needs to do what this other person wants. And everyone in the room, the folks who are working there, the folks who are gathering there to break bread, no one said anything. So in the silence, we all become complicit because we're saying the same thing that angry man is saying because no one's ready to stand up and say, wait, wait. So I think children, she reminds us that children actually receive this kind of ambivalent message all the time in their lives. We want to welcome children until children act like children. And then we want them to act the way we want them to act. Like, sit up, be this way, be quiet. For Christ's sake, be quiet. See, there's kind of a phenomenal irony in that as well. Like, clearly this person had maybe no just general introduction to the New Testament. Because Jesus is actually pretty clear about this. So it's ironic to invoke his name in the midst of this. But I think often this happens in our lives. We want to say you're welcome, but we end up actually living out some other way. And most churches are a lot like that pizza place. We want to put up a sign and say, welcome, family oriented, children come here. And then you come in and we struggle with it. In part because I think it's actually easier said than it is done. Our space, for example, you walk into this space, and if you are 3, you are sitting behind a pew that is greeting you right at eye level, correct? That's what you're seeing. Not the beauty of all of this and the creation story up here. This is the Godly Play creation story. We'll talk more about it. But you're looking at the back of some wood. And then we put some images and words up on a screen that you can't read, and we want you to hang in there, right? Come on. See, spaces like this weren't actually built in a way to prioritize 2-year-olds or 4-year-olds. They were an afterthought as we were imagining what this space would look like when it was built. We do try hard here at the table, and we're certainly not perfect, but we put out rocking chairs to help folks find a space that feels a little bit more comfortable. We also have down the hall a nursery because we recognize that from like 18 months to three, I promise parents of three-year-olds, three, things start to shift a little bit. Like for those months, it can be really, really hard for a child's freedom to be inhibited. So we want to set up a space in the nursery where the child can just do what she needs to do or what he needs to do and be watched over and loved by a caring person who's in that space. And we also recognize that especially for parents, but when both parents work, the sanctuary can be a space where this is your only opportunity, it feels like sometimes, to actually be with your child. So you want nothing more than to have the child there with you during that worship experience. And we have a family that I was meeting with last week, and they said, I can't believe anybody will even sit within two pews of us. Like, my child is really hard for me to handle in this moment. And people, they keep sitting near us, so they must be somewhat okay with it. I don't know, actually. I don't know what's going on in these spaces. But I do know, as a person who's tried to move in spaces like this with children, it is a really, really hard thing. It's one of the reasons we have Godly Play for preschool all the way through the end of elementary, because we want to be able to provide an age-appropriate space for children to wonder and explore faith in their own ways. And we think that happens best when children learn to worship together in their own space, both with us and then in their own opportunity. So for these next 3 weeks, we're going to look together at what it means to be a community that longs to welcome children into this space. This morning, I'm going to share a little bit about Godly Play, our children's ministry, and my own experience with that. Next week, I am very excited that Jackie Courtright, who's a retired UCC pastor, and she's also a Godly Play teacher here in our community, she is going to share this story that you see up here. And it doesn't do justice to talk about Godly Play as I'm trying to do this week. The best thing that you can do next week is just to experience it. It's changed my own sense of faith and my own faith journey, and I'll share about that. And I hope that it will for yours as well. So Jackie is going to share the creation story next week with us and then help us as a community to wonder. And then during our final week of this series, we're going to use the Godly Play story of baptism to help us think about baptism here at the table, what it means to live out our baptismal covenants, or I'm looking at people that were baptized here not very long ago, and what it might mean for you to be baptized in this space in the fall, and we'll ask some of those questions together and wonder about that. Matthew 19 says it like this: "Then little children were being brought to him in order that he might lay his hands on them and pray. The disciples spoke sternly to those who brought them." Maybe they too were at that pizza place sometimes. But Jesus says, "Let the little children come to me and do not stop them, for it is as to such as these that the kingdom of heaven belongs." Joyce Ann Mercer, in a book called Welcoming Children, says that children, by their very presence, invite churches to make their worship part of the gospel's anti-imperialist and countercultural narrative by prioritizing accommodations for the least and the littlest among us. That's what having children among us does. It makes us to take seriously Jesus' call to welcome those in our lives. So one of the most important gifts that children bring to a community like ours is this opportunity to act like the radically welcoming community that Jesus longed for us to actually be. And sometimes we stumble at this, so we need to be rooted in grace as we do it, and then also to grow and to welcome children in these ways. And it's not about, as we do this, it's not about a branding technique to make sure that we're reaching out to families because there's an income stream. This is actually just a way to welcome and grow in our own faithfulness, right? That's who we're called to be. So with the hope of increasing our faithfulness here at the table, we made an investment. We had a grant that allowed us to get started as a church. And the things that we decided we were going to try to invest in with this grant were music. It turns out Brendan can play the piano. And Godly Play Children's Ministry. So those were the things that we said, when God longs for us to be a dynamic community of faith, this is who we want to be. So we didn't really have hardly any children at the time, but we went ahead and invested in two Godly Play sanctuaries. And that was 5 years ago. And we've grown now to where we have four of those sanctuaries that are open every Sunday morning as we gather. You see around us, some of the stories of godly play. And as we move later during communion and prayer, I'm going to invite you to actually spend some time with some of these stories. We'll have the next couple of weeks to do this. And you'll see them there in front of you. And I want to invite you to work with them and to spend some prayerful time with them. We have a teenager in our community who for the last 5 years, she's been in godly play as a student. And then for this last year, she's been a doorkeeper. And now she has set up our sanctuary to help us feel a little bit of what it's like to be in a godly play sanctuary. When our children are in the sanctuary, in their own godly play sanctuary, they're surrounded by bookshelves. You'll have a better sense of this next week as we gather. And the stories fill up those shelves. So you have a physical reminder of these handmade, phenomenally gorgeous stories that will help you enter into the biblical text in a way that I had never experienced until I did with godly play. The goal of godly play is this. It's to teach children the art of using religious language. Parables, like the way that Jesus talked about. Sacred stories, like the stories from the Hebrew Bible. Silence. And liturgical action, like what we'll experience with baptism. These help the children become more fully aware of the mystery of God's presence in their lives. That's our goal. That's how we long to be as we gather in this way. See, there is one method of teaching that assumes that a child is an empty vessel, and the teacher is going to fill that empty vessel with knowledge, with information about God or about faith. That's one way of approaching children's ministry. Godly play turns that upside down and says that every child, every one of us at every age is intrinsically spiritual, having an experience of God. And what we need is a community, all of us together, to come alongside to help us give some language to what it is that we're experiencing out in the world. So that's what godly play longs to do, is help us find some of the language to put with the mysteries, with the hope, with the power of the Spirit that we already experience. So what happens in godly play is worship. This is not what happened in my childhood experience of Sunday school. We had a project that was predetermined by a teacher. And if I didn't know this at the time, but you were worried as the teacher, like, do I have enough projects? Do I have enough things to keep everyone busy? We might have a verse that we would memorize. And that's what we did. I can't remember the last time we came to worship together and we had a project that we were going to have everybody work on together, or a biblical verse memorization time. We don't do that as adult children of God. So why would we teach our small children of God how to be in worship that way? So instead, what we do in godly play mirrors exactly what happens in this very space. So think back to your own experience. You walked this way. Maybe you walked or biked or drove to this space. You went across a threshold into the sanctuary. We're pretty laid back with that. Some of you came in with coffee or tea, right? But at some moment, you said, I'm ready to go into that space. And that's what happens for our children. They leave the sanctuary and a doorkeeper meets them there at the door to help make sure they're ready. And that's what they ask them. Are you ready? Connie, are you ready to come into godly play this morning? And sometimes we're not. Like sometimes you need to stay out for a little bit longer before you come in. Sometimes you got to leave your phone with you in the car because you know you can't stop, right? Some of my story. And so we get ready, we slow down into that space. And then as the child comes in, a storyteller invites the child into a place in the circle. Some of you have been in worship here for a long, long time, and you've been trying to sit in the same pew every single week. And then, dang it, a new person came in and sat in your spot. So what are you going to do? Our children wonder about these same things. They have these small, like 1 foot diameter little rugs that have an animal on them. And I know Eleanor loves to sit on the ladybug. So she wants to sit the ladybug down in this space and to be there. And maybe you have your space that's in there as well. And then the storyteller invites us into worship. We light a Christ candle to remind us of God's hope and love that's been there with us. And this is an image of it. And then the storyteller tells about where we are in the calendar of the church year. And then they take a story like the ones that you'll see around and they place it in the very center of the circle. This is an image. It's a reminder that God's stories are right there in the middle for everyone to access. Nobody, the storyteller or a pastor or a four-year-old, no one has special access to this. It's right there in the middle for everyone. And then there's a tactile telling of the story. So that people of God might move through the desert. You see the story. You hear it. And then after that time, after the story is shared, the storyteller invites children to wonder. I wonder where you saw yourself in that story, Joe. It's what we do in prayer, or maybe during the message at moments ourselves. We start to wonder about God's hope and life and love that's living inside of us and around us. And we wonder about that and we work on it. And that's what our children do. They do that together. And then they move to a time to respond, either individually or in small groups. They might choose art like clay or painting, or they might choose to work with a story. I'll never forget coming into a Godly Place sanctuary and having a three-year-old have this story out, the story of the Good Shepherd. And this three-year-old started to tell me the story of the Good Shepherd woven together with the big bad wolf, all in one moment. Working through all of the different things that he was experiencing in his life at that time. It's pretty powerful to have a three-year-old telling you a parable of Jesus as they're trying to put their life together and to make sense of it. They work on these things through their time of response. And then after their response, they gather for a feast. And I'd love for you to ask our kids about this, because some of them are working on this. Why do we call it a feast? It's crackers and juice. I don't know. Maybe that'll seem familiar later in worship. But they're wondering, like, why do we call this a feast? Shouldn't there be a lot more food? Trying to figure this out. And then from that space, in that circle, as we've built God's community, the children are sent out into the world to practice their own faith. One of the founders of a movement that is similar to Godly Play, that's called Catechesis of the Good Shepherd, it's mostly found in Catholic churches. She writes about it like this: in helping the child's religious life, far from imposing something that is foreign to the child, we are responding to the child's silent request. Help me to come closer to God by myself. That's what that child longs for. Maybe it's what we all long for. And Godly Play is about fanning that divine flame that is within the child and inviting them into the language of God to help them wonder together about how the Spirit is moving in their own life. It helps children to come closer to God. So that's probably not what a lot of your experiences with Sunday school were like. So how did we get from Sunday school to Godly Play? How did we get there? First, I want to invite us to step back for a second. So Sunday school is a movement. It didn't just begin with Jesus. This is a movement that began around the Industrial Revolution. And it began in the slums of Britain. And it began as children were working 6 days a week. Churches came alongside on Sundays to create Sunday school, and it served a couple of purposes. One of those was they imagined just keeping the kids who weren't working out of trouble. We'll give them a little bit of structure. And since they're not learning to read or write, we're going to provide a way, we're going to teach children literacy. That's where Sunday school emerged from. And look, we can also honor the Sabbath. Those three things were kind of happening all around the same time. John Elias is a professor at Fordham. He traces Sunday school from the late 18th century to today with this. It went from being a school for the poor and the working class to an instrument of evangelical or revivalist Protestantism to what it is today, a school for the education of Protestant believers of all ages. That's what Sunday school in most churches looks like. It's a time where adults come together for a Sunday school class or children come together for their own. It's interesting to think about the way it rose in the Catholic Church as well. See, Roman Catholics set up a parallel educational system. What they were actually trying to do was organizing something around ethnic parishes to serve new immigrant communities. That's where Roman Catholic schools came from. That's what that emerged and why it looks so different in Catholic and Protestant circles in these ways. And, you know, neither of these traditional models work for everyone. So somebody that it wasn't working for, who decided to think outside of the box, he was an Episcopal priest. It's around 50 years ago. His name's Jerome Berryman. He was deeply influenced by Maria Montessori, the founder of the Montessori method of teaching. She was a physician and an educator and a profound thinker in her time. He wove together Montessori principles with biblical stories to create what we know today as godly play. So we might think of godly play as a ministry for children, but in large part, I'm here today in this very moment because of godly play, because I found it as an adult. I don't have strong memories of Sunday school, but I was taught by my family that God is love. And that was enough for me for quite a while. And then around junior high, life in my family started to fall apart in certain ways. My dad had lost work, and my maternal grandfather had passed away. And my family was in the midst of all of this grief, and they were distancing themselves from church. And so as we as a family were distancing from church, I found myself moving in, didn't know it at the time, but into more charismatic, fundamentalist Christian circles. And I loved the passion and the energy and the power that I experienced when I was in junior high and high school in those spaces. It was profoundly moving as everything seemed like it was falling apart. And at the same moment, the world as I had known it didn't fit with the faith as they were explaining it to me. So I almost always felt like a round peg trying to be pushed into this square hole. It just didn't quite work for me. Women couldn't be in leadership roles. Well, my mom was this really strong leader. All of these different things happened. And then I found myself thinking I was running away from church and actually going to seminary, not because I ever imagined being a pastor, but because I wanted to fight back. I did not want people to be able to use biblical texts as a weapon against folks that I loved. So it was kind of expensive therapy to go to New York City. So I went for 3 years, and I was studying Koine Greek and Hebrew Bible and New Testament. And I was learning about post-colonial theory and queer theory. And I was trying to make sense of all these different things and pulling them together. But inside, what I mostly wanted to do was be ready to have a defense. No matter what anybody quoted, I wanted to be able to put it in historical context, deconstruct their argument, and stand strong with folks. I'd studied this. I'd learned about it. I was passionate in these ways. And I found myself 2 years after seminary having all of this prepared me for maybe being in this moment right now. And what happened was this. I signed up for a 3-day class on becoming a godly play teacher. See, for me, the Bible had been this struggle place. I'm going to come back to no matter what you believe is true about it, make sure I am more grounded than this person across from me. And I found myself on the floor, up in a sanctuary in the front like this with 30 other people. And a storyteller started to tell the story of Abram and Sarai going on their long journey as people of God and being overwhelmed and amazed when God gifted them at this really old age with a child that they named Laughter. And in their language, the word for laughter is Isaac. And I found myself in the midst of that with 30 people around, with all of the walls that I had been putting up, unaware at that time, just kind of crumbling down. There were 30 people and just me and God in that moment, sitting on the floor. The books that I had read, the arguments that I'd been building up, like none of it mattered. Because I think for the very first time, I started to actually feel in the depths of my body and in my soul, God's love and God's story in my own life, right there on the floor with these other folks around. For 3 days, we got to experience stories. And for the first time, I allowed myself to be part of God's story. It wasn't just like getting ready to defend something or stand strong. It was God's love right there, going from my head and those walls tumbling down. See, I was finding in that moment a way that the mystery and the power of God, the hope of Jesus, was alive in those stories and in me at that time. And all those years of school, on some level, I think they led me to that space. And on another level, I needed something way more than that could ever allow for me. There are two pastors who work with kids. They write about it like this. The task of children's ministry is to form young disciples to help children build identities as followers of Jesus. It's about apprenticing children in the ways of Jesus, the ways of love and reconciliation and beauty and hope and justice making and service and mercy. It's about teaching and guiding and coming alongside and accompanying children with the words and actions of Jesus. Rob Bell says it, that the rabbi thinks that we can be like him. So let's work on this together. I spent 2 years as a teacher for children, 3 and 4 year olds with Godly Play. And so if you're sitting there thinking, I don't have kids, this doesn't really, whatever, brunch next, wherever. Here's the deal. I was the least qualified, likely teacher for 3 and 4 year olds ever. Like in the history of all of the world, I was the worst prepared to do this. And I sat on the floor with 3 and 4 year olds. This is way before we had Eleanor, and wondered with them about these stories. And I thought initially, and from the outside, I think people thought I was like the teacher, I was the one doing this. But really what I was doing was Godly Play was giving me some language to learn about the faith for myself. And I needed some 3 and 4 year olds to come alongside me and sit on the floor and have some patience with me and wonder together about God and about the stories of Jesus and about what that might mean in our life. So maybe you're like me a number of years ago. You're the least qualified, probably the last person that's going to be called to children's ministry. But maybe that's actually what you need as well. Maybe you need to come to one of these trainings and sit on the floor with folks and wonder about the way that God's Spirit and love moves in your life and in the world. And maybe Godly Play could be a method that could help you with that. Maybe you remember the person who was at the pizza place over in the Bay. She has another story that she shares. Her child at the time is 3, and she's out in the Philippines, and they are hungry. So they come down from the place that they're staying to a restaurant. And I imagine when I was a Godly Play teacher, if a person told me that they had an experience in the Bay Area with their child being hangry, surely you'd figure it out 6 months later and you wouldn't have this same issue. But that's actually not the case. You learn this over and over and over again as a parent. And so did she. She gets to the restaurant and she places an order. And it's going to take a little while. And her child is 3 and starting to go to that place of hangry again. And she's starting to look around in her diaper bag. She's got another child there with her. She's looking around in it like, do I have anything here? Am I a terrible parent again? Please let me have something in this space. And before she can even find anything in her own bag, the person that's seated next to her has opened up a banana and just given it to her daughter and said, she looks hungry here. A person who works in the space brings out a little bit of coconut juice and says, here, I'm working on the main dish, but start with this. Start with this. That's what the vision of beloved community looks like. It looks like people being in it together, finding ways to welcome the children among us. And I don't say it in some like idealistic way of, oh, look, this happened in the Philippines. Like, we're all aware that much of the Philippines is rooted right now in real abject poverty. That's not okay with God shouldn't be okay with us. And we as followers of God should actually try to figure out how to work on the real human needs that children have there. Like they started the Sunday schools to meet the needs of those children in the slums of Britain. And that place is one of the places where God's love was being born. In the midst of all of that that was happening, that child crying in that little Filipino restaurant, we behold and we glimpse the transforming power of God's love. It's a foretaste of the divine realm of shalom that keeps breaking into our lives. Jesus says, whoever welcomes one such child in my name welcomes me. And whoever welcomes me welcomes not me, but the one who sent me. So may the Spirit of God continue to strengthen us that we might be a place of welcome for children, that we too might follow in those ways of Jesus. Amen.